So in this text called Mana Shodhanam, or purification of mind, which we have been doing for the past couple of months or so, we have studied the importance of mental purification, because our mind has so many impurities and negativities, so much agitation and disturbance. One cannot progress, whether in meditation, whether on the spiritual journey. So whether on the spiritual journey or in the sitting for meditation, or even to deal with the world, when the mind is disturbed, then we are stressed and then we go to a psychiatrist or take pills. So mental purification is very important, and we have studied about that in the past few weeks. And then we say that the main problem we find is, some people say it's the world. The world bothers me, you know, people, my spouse, my child, my neighbor, my boss, the weather, the president, you know, we have all kind of things that disturb us. Or some people say it is my own mind. You know, I get stressed because I'm a stressed person. And we say, well, the wise person, there are so many wise people and great prophets and saints, you know, like Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Guru Nanak and Mirabai and all these great saints and prophets, they also dealt with the same world. They also faced problems, in fact, more than what you and I face. But they were able to cheerfully go through it, and they also had the same mind that you and I have. And how were they able to overcome that? So we had studied through knowledge. And last week, we had removed these three fallacies. I won't repeat it again if those who are interested. But there are three ignorances or three wrong notions we have. One is that the world is real. Second, the world is separate from me. And third, the world gives me joy and sorrow. So then I say, okay, so if the world gives me joy and sorrow, I don't believe, you know. Or even if the mind within me creates joy and sorrow, what is the result? What happens? When something is joyful, what happens? When something is sorrowful, what happens? Because that is where all the problems arise. So we'll talk about in verse number 16 in page 31. Those who are new, if they are interested, we do have the books available, or you can get them at the end of the class. So verse number 16, page 31. Raga dvesho prajayate. Tada chitte vrithai vahi. Tābhyām hyaham pravarte vā, hyaham pravarte vā, nivarte lokavastuni. So as a result of joy and sorrow, so I like something or I don't like something. So when there is something that is joyful, I get attached to it. I like it. I want it. I must have it. No matter what happens, I must possess it. It could be an object. It could be a person, or somebody I like and I want to marry her, or a job I want, or a position I want. Or it could be a great undertaking, like I want to win the Olympics, or I want to climb Mount Everest. So things that I like, I develop a liking, raga. And then things that I don't like, I want to run away from. I hate it. I don't want it. I just dislike it. And then what happens when the likes and dislikes, desire and attachment and hatred, they arise? Prajayate tada. Then in that mind, when I find things that are giving me joy and sorrow, I get attachment and I get hatred. Where? In the mind. Objects are outside. But the liking or disliking is in the mind, because the same object, as we had talked last week, can give joy to one and sorrow to the other. You know, like cigarette. If the joy was in the cigarette, then everybody would have an equal amount of joy. One person loves it, one person hates it. So the joy or sorrow is not in the object, it is in the mind. That's what they say. In the mind it arises. And then what do I do? Vritha, in vain, I just waste my time doing what? Tabhyam, inspired by that, inspired by these likes and dislikes, attachment and detachment, what do I do? Hear him, pravartate. I run towards some things. I like it. I must have it. I must have it. No matter what it costs, no matter how much it takes. And then something I dislike, I run away. Don't bring it near me. I don't want it. I don't like it. The same object I loved at one time, and I married, and I am, and then 5 years from now, they're standing in the courtroom and, you know, they can't even look at each other. So it's the same object. It's the same girl. It's the same. But why do I, you know, get this? It is in the mind. So let us see what happens when desire and attachment arise. These are some of the points. Swamiji in his commentary has only written a few lines, but there were certain points I thought were necessary to cover in this particular verse, which talks about detachment and attachment, desire and hatred. We find that in this life, we chase after a lot of things. I want this, I want that, I must have it. But is it always necessary that what I want is good for me or I should have? You say, yeah. But there was one famous person who said that everything I like in the world is either illegal, immoral, or fattening. Everything I like in the world is either illegal, immoral, or fattening. But one person was smarter. He added something else. He said, everything I like in the world is either illegal, immoral, fattening, or someone else's wife. So we find that, you know, I mean, like say sweets or chocolates or ice cream, we all love to eat it. But is it really good for one? Or it could be anything else. You know, it could be a person I'm so attached to. We find there are so many instances where people even get attached to people in jail. You know, they fall in love with somebody in jail and they marry him. He may be a drug dealer, murderer, child rapist, you know, but they feel, oh, he's changed. And when he comes out, then he ruins her life. So one has to be very careful that when you develop likes and dislikes, desires and attachment, one has to use one's discrimination that am I getting attached to the right thing or not? That's number one. So one has to be very alert when developing likes and dislikes, attachment. The second problem that I have found that happens to all of us is that what we dislike follows us. You will have noticed it again and again. Something you don't want, and you go there and it will be there. You know, some person you don't like, he will show up exactly where you don't want him. There's this story of this young man who was engaged to this girl, and so he went to his father-in-law's house, and they were not expecting him, so they had a very simple meal of zucchini and, you know, some lentils that the Indians make. Now, zucchini is a vegetable which is considered to be a sick man's food. You know, somebody is sick, you give it to him because it's something light. Not everybody likes it. He didn't like it, but he went there and they also felt sorry. You know, we didn't know you were coming. All we have is zucchini. But he said, you know what? I love zucchini. You know, he didn't want to, you know, it was first time in his mother-in-law's house. He didn't want to say, I love zucchini. So they gave him extra in his plate, you know, fed him more. So now what would happen is every time he goes to the mother-in-law's house, they make zucchini. Why? Because they like it. And after a few months, he said, I need to stop going to my mother-in-law's house. Every time I go, she makes me zucchini. And the mother-in-law and father-in-law says, we need to stop inviting this guy. Every time he comes, we have to eat zucchini. So things that we don't like always follow us. So that is the second point. And that's why it is important not to have strong likes and dislikes, because if you have strong likes, I must have it, or if you have strong dislikes like hatred and all, then what you're doing is you are disturbing your inner peace, because every time I see that person or that object, I get angry, I get disturbed. What they say is that instead of developing likes and dislikes, hatred, see the divinity in all. Because nobody of us is perfect. Everybody is a mixture of good and bad. Nobody is black or white. We are all shades of gray. So look at the divinity in all. Look at the divinity in yourself and look at the divinity in people. And then what will happen is slowly you can start focusing on that person's good qualities. And once you do that, then you develop positive feelings and then you get a positive feelings back. So that is how you overcome hatred, by looking at the positives. Then, you know, the spirituality always tells us that you need to be detached. You know, do not be too much attached to worldly objects. If you want to be attached to God. You know, if you get too much dependent on somebody or too much dependent on something, and that is a problem. And, you know, all the scriptures tell us that ultimately the one that you need to know most or get closest to is God. And God is not anybody else in the church or temple, but is in your heart as your life. So slowly turn your attention towards God and detach yourself from the world. Detach, we do not mean that you have to put on orange clothes or and become a monk or put on a habit and go into a monastery. But slowly detach yourself, reduce your dependence on worldly objects. But we find that most of us, when I get detached from something, it is usually for the wrong reason. Person will say, I don't like to go to parties. I just hate parties. Actually, he likes it. But why does he say that? Because he never gets invited. You know? So he'll say, I don't like all this jumping and music and dancing. I'd rather be home on Friday, you know, watching TV. But in reality, either he's not invited or, you know, the party that he was invited to, there was somebody he didn't like or he didn't like the host. So detachment comes for the wrong reasons. Or a person gets detached from objects when he gets sorrow. When some object or some person gives him so much pain, he says, I want nothing to do with it. So that is the second way to get detached. One is through wrong knowledge. Third one is through pain. But the most interesting detachment is called Smashan Vairagya, which means funeral detachment. So if you have been to a funeral and when after you are coming home and you know you have either buried or cremated that person and you're driving home and then you talk to your spouse, you know what? Life is so temporary. It's like a dewdrop, you know, on a lotus leaf. We have the saying in India, how a dewdrop on the lotus leaf falls and merges. So we don't know when life will end. So let us from today onward, you know, start our spiritual journey because, you know, we don't know whether we'll live 6 months or a year or 5 years. That person was so young, you know, and one day he was right in front of us, second day heart attack, he's gone. So then you develop this detachment from the world and you say, from now on, I'm going to become more spiritual, do more service, go to church faithfully every Sunday. Sorry, God, I haven't been doing that. And so... But then that only lasts for a short while till the next morning. And then, you know, you're back to work and you forget about God and forget about the person you died. You say, I have enough problems, God. Maybe after 65, I'll come and see you. So detachment comes for the wrong reasons. But detachment has to come through right understanding. And we'll talk about that in the next few weeks. What is the right understanding? But the main topic of this verse today is that joy and sorrow, hatred and attachment, success and failure are two sides of a coin. You have heads and you have tails. You cannot have heads and say, I do not want tails. I want my coins only to have heads. No, they say, sorry. The US Mint makes them like that. If you have heads, you have to get tails. And you flip the coin, one time you will get heads, another time you will get tails. So in life also, joy and sorrow are two sides of the same coin. It's not that you can say, I only want joy in life. Say, sorry, buddy, if you want joy, sorrow is on the other side. You just have to flip it. One day you get joy, one day you get sorrow. One day you get success, one day you get failure. There is no time or no place where they do not go together. It is impossible to deal with the world only with joy, or you say, I only want sorrow. No, they will come. And so one day you will have joy, another day you will have sorrow. And one day you will have success, another day you will have failure. So how does a wise person deal with that? You and I, what we do is, one day things are going well, I'm on top of the clouds, I'm happy, I'm dancing and singing. And then tomorrow, you know, my husband didn't smile at me, so I'm depressed and I'm whole day sad. Or so-and-so didn't talk to me, or I didn't get this particular job, or I didn't get this particular thing. It could be something even small. Somebody cut me off in traffic. Then my whole day gets ruined because I gave him the finger and he, you know, everything becomes a mess. So how does the wise person deal with that? Does the wise person not have joys and sorrows? Does the wise person not have problems? And like last week, somebody asked, you mean to say we should not enjoy, we should not have fun? We should all the time be like a stone? No, we don't say that. What we say is that life will have joys and sorrows, but one has to deal with them with understanding. There is a very famous book, which is available in the library, called Jeevan Muktanand Lahiri, How a Wise Person Deals with the World. And the first verse says it very beautifully. It says, a wise person who is a realized sage, or a wise who has realized the truth. Now, he could be with youngsters who are enjoying fun. They are in a carnival or in the Kern County Fair or in some fun place. Everybody's laughing, dancing, joking, and there's rides going on and food. And he's there and he has fun. He said, oh, I'm having a great time. With the youngsters, he has fun. And then next day, he's traveling from one place to another. And of course, nowadays we don't have forests, but this time when this book was written, you know, there were forests in India. And so these wise people, these saints, used to walk. And so he may be enjoying one day, but then next day he's in between two villages and it's night falls and he has to go to sleep. And he's sleeping on a riverbank, all alone, sleeping on the hard rock. There is nobody around, you know. But when he's in the company of young people, he's enjoying. When he's in the alone, he's not miserable. In both situations, he's firmly established in the knowledge that this will change, this will not be permanent. And he is established in the knowledge that I am that spiritual essence, that spiritual being, which we have talked many times in this class. And so joys and sorrows will come to the body, to the mind. There will be joys and sorrows, heat and cold, success and failure. But he is so firmly established in the truth that the teacher has taught him that he is fine. One day he may be invited for a great feast. Some rich man has said, you know, I have this great party, and he gets a meal with 25 dishes and he enjoys that. And then second day he happens to be traveling again through the forest and he does not reach the other village and he gets no food. And he's hungry. But does his mind get disturbed? No, his mind is peaceful. Even when things are going great and things are joyful, he knows, okay, this is happening, okay. And he's enjoying. But inside his mind, he's neither overjoyed when things are going well, nor depressed when things are going down. And he knows that in life there will be death. Today I'll be attending somebody's, you know, birth. Some new child is born and I'll go and celebrate with the mother, give her a hug. And then tomorrow I'll go to another lady whose mother has died and I'll be offering my condolences. So inside, he has sympathy and love for all, but when his own body is going through joys and sorrows, he's able to withstand that. And I'll end with the story of such a sage. It's a very, very beautiful story of how wise people handle the problems in life. I have told this story many years back, so hopefully most of you have not heard it. But there was this village, and outside this village lived a monk. And he was a very wise person. He lived in a small hut that the village people had built for him. And he lived there, and he had his, you know, few possessions that they had bought for him. He, of course, had no money of his own. And he had a little glass and, you know, small bed and all that. And so the people in the town would go there for wisdom, and he would give them talks and he would give them advice. And so they would then support this wise person because he was a source of wisdom and compassion and love and knowledge for everybody. And so that's how he maintained, you know, somebody would give him a little money or give him take food for him. Or take some milk for him, you know, things like that. So that's how he lived. He had his two simple clothes and he just washed one. It so happened that a girl in that village got pregnant. This was, you know, the olden days when it was a big shame. You know, the parents were humiliated and the girl was. Nowadays, of course, 12, 13, 14, you find people in high school getting pregnant and it's no big deal. But anyway, this girl was ashamed and she was very worried. And it so happened that the boy belonged to a different caste and her parents would not accept him and, you know, might even kill him or something. So she was afraid. And so now the parents asked her, who got you pregnant? We want to know. And, you know, we will kill him, you know, because who did this to you? So she didn't know what to say. And so suddenly from her mouth, it came out that monk, you know, in that hut, because she used to go take food for him. So she said, he got me pregnant. So they said, that monk whom we respected? Yes, father, he's the one. So they all the villagers got together. And of course, it was not the monk. It was the boy from the other caste. You know, in those days, caste system was. And so they went and insulted that monk. You know, you rascal, you crook. We respected you and we thought you were a wise person. And all, and even our daughters came and, you know, served you and brought you food. And this is how you do that? What kind of a person you are? And the insult. He said, what happened? I don't know. He said, you got this girl pregnant. He said, is that so? That's all he said. Is that so? He said, yeah, that is so. Now you got her pregnant. You have to keep her. She's going to live in your hut. He said, is that so? Yeah, that is so. You have to do that. I said, okay, no problem. So she started living. Obviously, people stopped bringing food. You know, nobody would take care of him because they said he's worthless. So he had to work. So he went out and found some odd jobs and he would earn a little money and take care of the girl and bring food. And the child was born after 9 months and he again would get milk for the child and take care of the girl. And he did it. You know, it's okay, that's God is destined for me to do it. He did it without any complaint, without even telling that she's not my child, nothing. He just kept on. So this boy who had got the girl pregnant moved away to a different town. And there he became very prosperous, became very successful, started a business. And then he started remembering this girl I used to love and this baby, you know, I abandoned them. He felt very sorrowful. And by then he was a very successful businessman, had a lot of money. So he comes back. And now he comes with, you know, with his chariot and with his servants and all these clothes. And he goes up to the father and says, look, I'm sorry. I, you know, abandoned your daughter, but it was really me, you know, and this child is mine. They said, really? It's yours? He said, yeah. So they said, oh my God, they feel so bad. You know, we humiliated that saint. We mistreated him and we called him all kinds of horrible names. Let's go apologize. So they go to the saint and they say, we are very sorry. They fall down at his feet. They're crying, especially the father, because he had, you know, almost beaten him. So why are you crying? What's the matter? What's the matter? They said, that's not your child. It's not my child. Is that so? Really? Yep, that's not your. Whose is it? Is this boy's? Oh, is that so? That's all he said. So they said, yeah. And so they felt apologized and they took that child and gave it to the father and got them married. So the point of the matter is that this wise person, he knew that in life, the things are always not going to be the same. But he was so firmly established in that knowledge that whatever situations came to him, he did his best. He did his duty. That girl was given in his care. The child was born and he said, it's my job to take care of them because they are living in my heart. So without any likes or dislikes, without any attachment or hatred, they just perform their duties. Whatever job you have been assigned in, whether you're a teacher or a doctor or a housewife or a computer engineer, whatever job you're doing in whatever situation you are in, you do the duties to the best of your ability. Do what is wherever you have been placed by the Heavenly Father, the Lord, wherever I have been placed, I do my best without any likes and dislikes, without any attachment and hatred, and constantly remain balanced. The more you get established in this knowledge, the more you meditate, the more you pray, the closer you get to the truth of your own existence, the more calmer you become. And that's why when we are in the presence of these saintly people, we experience great calmness because they exude calmness. You know, I have had the good fortune of meeting so many saintly wise people in this mission. So their wisdom and their calmness has been a great source of comfort for me. So that calmness comes from, not from outside. It's not a forced. For us, if I want to become calm, what do? I take a Valium. And, oh, then I'm peaceful. Or I have a couple of drinks. Then life is great. But their calmness comes from within. It's not from without. And so that is what we say. That is what you should do. So through meditation, through prayer, through right knowledge, through the practice of this knowledge, you slowly develop this peace of mind and this equanimity. And that is what one says one has to do. Through the presence of joys and sorrows, if you can remain balanced, then such a person is a wise person. Next week, we shall continue this subject of joy and sorrow, hatred and detachment, as to why does it arise? Why even in the first place this joy and sorrow arises, we'll talk about next week. And as I said, those of you who want to hear the previous talks, we do have this card, firstpower.info. You can go to that, or just you can Google talks by Dr. Anil Mehta, and that will bring you to that website. So you can listen to the previous talks. If anybody has any comments, any questions, or any discussion, we have a few minutes. Yes?
I find that the things I dislike follow me.
True. Yeah, absolutely true. Because sometimes, right. That's what they say. The Lord will keep on repeating the lesson until you learn from it. So if there is something you need to learn, and if I'm getting sorrow or I'm getting some problem, it is because that Swamiji says that we are all in this hospital. All of us are in the hospital of this world. And we are here because we are sick. We are not well. And there is a divine doctor. Can call it Father in heaven or Allah or God, or but that divine doctor gives us medicine that is needed for us to get well. And for some people, like if a person, there are three or four people in the hospital, one may be getting an IV, one may be getting pills, one may be getting shots three times a day, and one has a fracture and his leg is up for in there, you know, in that cast for 3 months. Now, the guy in the cast for 3 months will say, how come I am getting the cast and this guy is only getting an injection? Why? Because you need different treatment. You have a broken leg, he has a pneumonia. And then one person has an indigestion and he has diarrhea. So he will get barley water, or he'll just get clear liquid, you know, jello and soup. And the other guy is eating big meals. So why is that? You know, the hospital is not fair. You know, I'm paying the same amount and I'm getting jello and that guy is getting all this food. Pizza and all. Why? Because he has a fracture. You know, he's nothing wrong with his digestive system. You know, he needs to eat to heal. So similarly, in this world, we all of us are here, and the divine doctor gives us the right dose of medicine that we need to get well. Some people need a heavy dose, so he gives us heavy, you know, sorrow. Some people need light dose. But the idea is that through that sorrow or through that problem, you can evolve and become a better person. Or of course, you can also believe that it is my karmas that are causing joys and sorrows. But the idea being that when you get sorrow, when you get problems, as Diana said beautifully, you learn from that, that this is an opportunity for me to improve. And that is how you deal with sorrows, that look at them as an opportunity to get better. Yeah, or another way to look at it is, it's not he getting you, but it's my own karmas that are catching up to me. It is my own actions that I have done that are because of which I am suffering the joys and sorrows. Because I have done good actions, I'm enjoying it. Or if I've done bad actions, I'm getting the suffering. And then we also, of course, believe that because of multiple births, your actions are carried from birth to birth. And that's why sometimes you may get some sorrow which is unexplained, which for which you did not do anything. So instead of blaming somebody sitting up there and, you know, inflicting sorrows upon me, you just put it to your own actions. Or you can say, God gets me, but it is my own actions that cause that to happen.
What did he do? He was such a nice person, of course.
Yeah, but the thing is, death is inevitable for everybody. Whoever is born has to die. You know, nobody is going to live forever. In fact, if you live forever, it will be miserable. After 70 or 80 or 90, if you keep on living, then life is just a misery. You want to end it. So one has to understand and accept that. that there is nothing impermanent, nothing permanent in this world. There is only one permanent, and that is the Lord. And hold on to that, and then, you know, you are able to handle separation. No, we had same thing, a couple who was very learned, very spiritual, and their young daughter died, unfortunately, at about age 16, and they lost their faith in God completely. She said, oh, I used to go to the temple and pray every week, and what kind of a God are you? You took away my daughter and all. So, yes.
I think one of the difficulties that I had and continue to revisit is that the goal in this study...
And then some amount of sorrow, obviously, you know, you will experience. And same thing, joy. But not to get so overwhelmed that 10 years from now you are still crying, you know, like that. You know, then you have not got the right knowledge. But a wise person can come out of no matter what, you know, curveballs, you know, life throws at that person, is able to, you know, come out, having got even the worst blows in life, but is able to get up and continue. That is the sign of wisdom.